Well, I pick one. We can just play three headlines and a lie.
Fantastic. Who could have thunk that?
Who could have predicted this?
Who would have seen that coming, and why didn't anyone warn them?
Ticked off, tee off. This is it.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time. This is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin. Happy Wednesday. Happy March. It is March 1st. We are in a new month. Hopefully that means spring is right around the corner. But here we are. Halfway through the week, Jane Matinair, how did it go without me yesterday?
Hey, we missed you, but Carol Kane was here, and we didn't break anything for the last 2 hours, so that was good.
And slow clap.
Thank you.
Slow clap.
And I would just like to confirm that it is almost officially spring because I saw a chipmunk run across the road this morning.
Oh, I saw a fruit fly. Does that count?
No, that just means you're gross.
Okay. And so that other voice you just heard is, of course, Mr. Greg Bach, because it is Greg Bach Hump Day Wednesday. Hello, sir.
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm also doing well.
Excellent.
Happy to be here. Happy to have you here.
Oh, my gosh.
And I'm also happy that it's Women's History Month.
Yeah. Now all the billboards... Just change them right at midnight.
From Black History Month to Women's History Month. There's some overlap. We can still celebrate Black women.
And without a doubt.
Are we allowed to? I don't know. Did Billboard say we could? I have no idea.
Yeah. But I thought this was interesting. So there is always a theme to every year. I don't know who gets to decide the theme, but there's a theme every year for the Women's History Month. And this month's theme is celebrating women who tell our stories. What does that mean? It means the recognition of women, past and present, who have been active in all forms of media and storytelling, including print, radio, TV, stage, screen, blogs, podcasts, news, and social media. So, Greg, I think that means you have to celebrate Jane and I.
Yay!
I understand there's a gift per day.
I know. I think that is provided part of the
stipulation. Provided by one's closest partner.
Exactly.
Right.
Mike and Paul.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we are going to try to do, I reached out to Wisconsin Historical Society this morning and said, hey, you got anyone who wants to come on and talk about different Wisconsin women's stories?
Right. I've done some in the past. Dude, probably.
There's a lot of them. There is a lot of them, but as far as getting someone who's a little bit more of an expert than me just reading off their website would be good.
Yeah.
Do you have a shiro?
Yeah, I've got a lot of them, honestly.
Yeah?
Yeah, from like the non-famous to the very famous. Yeah,
all right.
A lot of them.
Do you want to name any of them?
No, I'm just, yeah.
I'm going to keep it a secret.
No, I would say someone who's a big hero of mine is my grandmother. Even though, you know, I would love to say that I could tell you these stories about me going to my grandmother's house and she'd making cookies and it smelled like butter. No, it wasn't like that. But she was a truly... amazing woman, like in a day and age where, you know, people said, like, you stay with your husband and you live life and that's it. This is your job. She didn't. She
divorced his ass.
Divorced his ass.
Wow.
And wore pants in a time when they said, don't wear pants, own property, own businesses. Like, she was, you know, she did her thing. That was Grandma Ruth.
All right. Grandma Ruth.
Grandma Ruth didn't take guff. She didn't take guff from no one.
Is this your mom's dad or your mom's mom or your
my
dad's
mom's
mom?
Mom. Okay. Yeah, my mom's mom. She was pretty cool. And as far as like a famous lady, I still always go with Stacey Abrams. I just want to hang out with her and just high five and be like, can I do something to help you? You seem like you do a lot. Can I get you a hot beverage?
All right. Well, we will be celebrating that all month. But today we have a great show. In the bottom of the hour, we're going to give some updates on some Wisconsin budget news. Nothing concrete, obviously, because this is an ongoing negotiating situation. But then also have some fun topics. Well, no, I take that back. Child labor, definitely not a fun topic, but I think the angle we're taking it, because we had talked about a Wisconsin company that mid last month, it was reported that they had over 100 children working in their sanitation plants. But New York Times published an article this past week that within 2 days after it was published, and it was about migrant children and the rampant child labor laws that are being broken, the Biden administration went into action. And so I feel like just talking about the power of journalism and how it literally does spark change when done well is kind of the moral of that story. So that part's funner.
The uplifting part. That's uplifting.
The uplifting. It's the silver lining to an otherwise pretty dark story.
Child labor is not going in the no sour fun time power hour.
No. Okay. Certainly not going in the third hour of this show. And then we have for 12:30, is it ethical to have two full-time jobs, if you can? If you can swing it and you get your work done, is it ethical? Because if you're not telling either job that you have another full-time job, and obviously this has to be remote, they're both remote. But there's a lot of trends going on in the workplace that we're going to talk about then. But to kick off today, yesterday, SCOTUS heard some student loans oral arguments.
Yeah.
And if you're one of the 40 million people who is eligible and likely celebrated last summer when you thought that the last of your student loans, not all of them, but like 50% thought the last of their student loans were going to be forgiven, don't hold your breath yet, because the conservative court sounded a little skeptical of the arguments made yesterday in the Supreme Court about Biden's student debt relief program. And so just as a reminder and kind of what the case is, there's two different claims. One case is from six Republican-led states who argue President Biden doesn't have the authority to cancel student loans. And the other is from two people who didn't fully qualify for the relief program. And the just a reminder that the debt relief plan would wipe up to $20,000 in debt for more than 40 million people. And there's some stipulations as far as how much money you make as a single person or as a married couple, and if you took a Pell Grant. But as someone who still has student loans.
Are you pointing to me or to yourself?
I paid mine off.
Oh,
and so I am not. But I am one of the people who paid it off but doesn't feel like, well, I paid mine off.
Same here.
And so, but you would have benefited from this.
I would benefit. Now, I'm happy to say this. I have $3,100 left in school loans. I'm almost there. So if I get it, it'll be great. It won't provide me a great deal of relief. It just will, like, you know, that's one less thing I have to worry about. But I'm definitely, even if I paid it off, I'd still be saying, yes, help out, do something.
So it's interesting because it sounds like the only chance of this standing is if the two parties have like cause, right? Is that what you understood? Like, how much of the hearings did you read yesterday as far as what happened?
Well, as far, I mean, the little I was able to taper because I was working yesterday, but like, is that the justices, as it said, everyone's been using the term skeptical. And to me, that just spells this is not going to happen. That they're basically going to look at it like, does the president have the ability to unilaterally do this action without Congress?
Yeah.
Which they've been talking about for years, saying the president has the power to forgive up to certain amount. Okay, so fine. Now that he did it, now we're in the courts. You're saying now he can't do it. Why didn't Congress do something beforehand, limiting that power then, if it did exist in the first place? We waited for someone to do it, and he did it, and now we're here. And now we're like, every time I look at my school loan website, it always says, still in the courts. I'm like, I know it's still in the courts. I'm aware.
We have Charles on the phone checking in from Green Bay. Charles, what did you want to say about this?
Okay, you've got millions, if not billions, of PPP loans that went to people who didn't need them.
Yep.
And they were forgiven.
Yep.
Then you've got people who are struggling with student loans, and I'm not one of them. My student loans, I never had any, thank goodness, for my aunt and my grandmother, who bought U.S. savings bonds to pay for my college. But the point is, if they're struggling, and I could see, you know, giving some, you know, relief to the people who are struggling, but they have to prove that they're struggling.
So you feel like the threshold, the 100, was it 100,000 and 250,000? Or what were the two thresholds as far as how much people can make together?
I'm
not sure.
Okay. I knew it was 150,000.
For singles?
For singles, yeah.
So that means, and depending on where you live, that can be, 150,000 in Wisconsin is a lot of money.
It's a lot of money, yeah.
In correct. New York City, not so much. So you're saying that you think people should have to prove more need than just automatically qualify?
Yes. I think that would be a way to do it. Let's see. Matt Gaetz got $474,000 in PPP loans.
What's his company that he applied for under that? I know. Because the same thing with Marjorie Taylor Greene, it was a construction company?
That's her father's company.
Yeah, it's her dad's company.
That's her father's company.
Yeah.
And Jared Kushner got $800,000+.
Because he really needs
it. He needs the money.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, he needs it. You're right.
All right. Thanks so much for the call, Charles. If you have feelings or reactions to the hearings yesterday, or I guess just about student loans in general, because this is still a very controversial issue. Mm-hmm. There was a poll that came out that said 50% of midterm voters supported debt relief, student debt relief, whereas 47 opposed it. And, like, that's pretty even, especially compared to some of the other public opinion polling on big issues
right,
yeah.
that we see that's like it's really strong in one way or the other. This is pretty evenly split as far as how people feel about it. And I always come back to, it's one thing to have this one-time relief. It's another thing to actually fix the problem. And I feel like I still haven't heard any compelling theories as to how to fix the problem of why school has gotten so expensive.
Well, I mean, it's why is it so expensive is one question. How to fix it is the
So we'll keep talking about it after the break because I don't know if we're going to fix it, but we will keep talking about it. This is As Goes Wisconsin. We'd love to hear from you. 844-967-2789. That's 844-96.
Party!
We'll be right back.
Quite mild. Then why would you suggest it? And if they never forgive you, I'm probably going to outlive you and start hanging with your future child.
You really sound like a creep now.
Don't you know I'll always be your babe?
Gee, I'll go thank the dean.
Hey, you're the one who signed your life away.
Yeah, when I was 17, I couldn't comprehend my fate, much less define an interest rate. I wish it was a full debate, but now it's far too late.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. This is Kristen Bry. We got Jane Matinair and Greg Bach is here. Greg, I'm trying to figure out, someone on the text line said that there's reverb, and so we're trying to figure out which extra mic or sound is on.
Should be muted.
My computer is muted?
I don't know. That is
weird.
That is weird.
I muted mine on this end. We'll see if that makes a difference.
All right, let's see. All right. Well, welcome back. We are talking about the SCOTUS hearing, the student loan oral arguments yesterday, and their skepticism. The things that I heard is Justice Roberts, I guess he mentioned the cost, because it's almost half a trillion dollars. It's like, mm-hmm. you know, it's a lot of money, half a trillion dollars over 30 years. And I think that is his point as far as can they do this without Congress and spend this much money? But then there's also the thing that didn't make sense to me was I think it was Gorsuch and Alito bringing up fairness. And when has the law ever been concerned with fairness?
I mean, in its basis, yes, and its execution, no.
Yeah, that's what I mean as far as when it's actually coming in to interpret the law, isn't it, this is what the law says and not necessarily, well, is it fair or not? Like, cause that goes about like changing the law.
Yeah. I mean, I guess what are they saying? It's what isn't fair? Is it fair? Is it the? Because the thing I keep hearing, it's not fair to the people who don't have student loans. It's not fair to the people who didn't go to college. It's not fair. Yeah, but we pay for a lot of things that if you're looking at it from that angle, there's a lot of things that aren't fair with how we spend money in this country on certain things, whether we want to talk about war, whether we want to talk about infrastructure, whether we want to talk about education. So, you know, why should I pay taxes in a school district where I don't have a child? I still pay taxes. Money gets spent, so it's going to get spent. Do it. I don't know. That's my thought.
Yeah. And I don't know. Like, I feel like this, I don't, what is a better, is it this the solution of, is there anything in here that would make not everyone, but majority of people happy?
No, I don't think so. I think they scream it's not fair. They scream all these things, but they don't come with a solution. There is no solution. Their solution is don't do it. Let them pay. They went to school. They knew what they were doing when they got into it. But unfortunately, as we've seen story after story, people getting loans 10, 20, 30 years ago are still paying because the interest rates, the amount, they're not getting the jobs they thought they were going to get coming out of college. I mean, it's, I'm going to use the word unfair. Now people are going to be like, well, it's not fair. It's not fair. But yeah, it's sometimes it just isn't fair.
But is it fair that if you file for bankruptcy, if you had a business loan, mm-hmm. that would be forgiven and it would be wiped off your record, but your student loans aren't? Is that fair? That no matter what, you are on the hook for that when you signed up for it at 18?
Well, I mean, that's what, I mean, I wasn't
18.
And it's
18. Also like, it's a lot easier to get a student loan than it is to get a business loan.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's just, I mean, it's almost like getting a credit card nowadays. All you have to do is fill out some paperwork and that's it. I mean, yeah, I one of the things I've thought is that, excuse me, when you get a student loan, if it's a true loan, not a grant, but a loan, there should be some counseling in there too on how to, even though FAFSA, in order to graduate, when I graduated, I had to go through a class on paying my student, for those who can't see us, I'm doing air quotes. You had to do a class on paying off your loans or paying on your loans, but they really don't tell you about, like, take as much as you need. Don't take all of it. Go for grants. Look for grant money. There's lots of grant money. There's lots of scholarship money out there, but we don't because we just say, you're 18, you're an adult, boom, there you go. Go to college, make something better.
Go to the best college you can.
Yep, and after that, we don't have to worry about you at all. And the moment you sign on that paper and take that money, it's your problem, not ours.
Texter from the 608 says corporate America caused the problem by requiring a bachelor's degree or higher for jobs that do not exist. They should have the solution to fix the problem. They won't because of money. My student loans have accrued $30,000 in interest at 7%. And since I couldn't get a company to hire me, the loans were $35,000, now over $75,000. I am almost 50 years old. I will never be able to pay on those loans or even pay them off before my time on this earth is over.
See, and that's the kind, those are the kind of stories where I feel like the average person who's this isn't fair, and it, like, they don't actually understand. They think of some Ivy League or like liberal arts college who, you know, is in some cushy job or mm-hmm. something like that. Like, I think it's just, it's such a divide between the stereotype or the picture you've painted in your head of the other
yeah.
versus the actual burden that people have taken on and how much it's limiting and impacting our economy. Because when you hear that story, like, that's unbelievable.
But I don't think it's unusual.
No, it's not. I saw a story about a guy who got a student loan in the 70s. And he's still paying on interest. I mean, that thing is, and those people who say things like, you know, you know, it's.
Go ahead.
I was saying, it's people who say things like, too bad. That's, you know, you did what you did. These are the same people who, like, believe in the American dream. The most whitewashed basic version of the American dream, which is you pull yourself up by your bootstraps, you make something of yourself. That's what these people did. They're like, I'm going to go to college. I want to better my life. I want a degree. I want to get a better job so I can provide. That's what they did. They weren't shirking the system. They didn't have a famous or rich dad or mom. They were just doing what we told them to do. That dream is is going to college, quote unquote, which I no longer subscribe to, even though I have a college degree.
All right. Well, again, I don't think we fixed it, but it's super interesting. I mean, don't hold your breath for a little while because it sounds like this won't be decided. I mean, this could be until next summer, unless. Is there any reason why this would come before next summer? I guess this summer, I should say.
I was gonna say, whoa.
This summer.
No, yeah, I think we're gonna see it summer. It'll be summertime, and even on top of that, I don't think it's gonna be. I'm not holding my breath.
You're getting ready to pay your loans back.
Oh, absolutely. They'll pay it off by the time the decision comes down.
All right. This is As Goes Wisconsin. When we come back, a biennial budget watch. This we'll be right back. We'll have to wait and see. I'll call you back later. We are always open to having your phone calls and your text messages, 844-967-2789. That is 844-96-PARTY. You can also leave a comment on the live stream on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter, and we will read it. We will consider your thoughts. Maybe we will refute your thoughts. You never know, but we would love to hear from you.
In my time being here since September, we've never gotten, like, I mean, I'm not on the just show every day, but in the time I've been here on Wednesdays, we've never had like someone calling me like, you guys are full of BS, and I think the malarkey coming out of your mouth are crazy pants. I don't like it.
Yeah, we're pretty good. We're pretty good as far as we've yet to have anyone really, and I feel like Jane would cut them off pretty quickly. If anything were happen, as far as someone was like, well, we don't, that's not appropriate.
Yeah.
Please stop yelling at us. But yes, we always would love to hear from you. And so we march on with our topic for this segment. I feel like every day there's more information coming out as far as what was actually in the 10,000 page budget beyond what was addressed in Governor Evers' budget address, and also now more sound bites and reports on whether or not what the Republicans are going to include, what's DOA, et cetera, et cetera. So in this segment, we just thought we'd go through some of the headlines that I saw yesterday as far as things that may or may not end up in the final budget. The first one being, it sounds like, you know, I thought they were going to put up more of a fight, but it sounds like the GOP has decided that they are not going to die on the flat tax hill. And so,
dang.
I know, I was really going to see, I was like, I wonder, because basically Evers had said, this is a poison pill. I will not sign a flat tax.
Yeah.
And it seemed like Devin LeMahieu was the only one who was really pushing this, because even Robin Voss pretty early on was like, yeah, I mean, it'd be nice, but I'm not really counting on it.
Speaker Voss was quoted as saying,
probably other things that we can move forward with. And so, you know, it was good for me for content, because I got to make a video about how terribly something similar that happened in Kansas failed.
Oh, yeah.
And so
it broke Kansas.
It broke Kansas.
Thanks, Governor Brownback.
And so, good. So as far as this not being something that they're going to push through, I think this is a good thing. Do you have thoughts?
Can I be totally honest?
Sure.
I've never understood the idea of a flat tax. No one's ever been able to explain it to me where I'm like, I get that now.
Well, what do you mean?
Like, what a flat tax. So like, just like, there's a flat tax.
You mean like what it is or why it works or why it's a good idea?
Both.
Okay.
Yes, both.
So flat tax is basically just everyone pays 3.5% of their income taxes.
That's dumb.
Versus a progressive tax, which is what we have, which is what the federal tax system is as well, which is you're supposed to pay larger percentage depending on which bracket you're in and how much you're making. And so this would just say, and this is why it's a disproportionate boon for the wealthiest people, because they're right now paying a higher percentage. Mm-hmm. And so does that make sense?
That makes sense. It's just, I guess, why can't Republicans make it make sense to the people that, you know what I mean? Like, it sounds like you're going to pay less, and why people aren't on board with that. Maybe it's not let me rephrase it. It's not that I don't understand the flat tax. I don't understand why it is such a poison pill in states like our state. Like, I know that it was detrimental in Kansas. I guess it's, for me, like, it feels like it's something that should win a lot. in Republican-controlled state houses.
Well, there's some Republican state houses, and I don't know the tax code for every single. I know, like, Tennessee, Florida, Texas, Alaska. Who else doesn't have an income tax at all?
Nevada?
Maybe Nevada. Off the top of my head, I can't think of everyone who doesn't have a state income tax, tax at all. But to the south of that, I mean, there are multiple states that do have a flat tax, and then what they make it up in is sales tax and property tax and stuff. And so when you're looking at overall tax burden, because I think I saw some op-ed from, I think, someone from Badger Institute, which is a conservative think tank policy place, and their argument was that our neighbors, not Minnesota, but I think it was Illinois and Michigan, and then it was either Indiana or Iowa, has a flat tax. But then when you go and actually look at their overall tax burden, we're all basically the same.
Yeah.
Unless you live in Chicago, because like they have a higher city tax, right? And so I think it's also just what can you make it up with and other things. So it's like in Florida, tourism. In Texas and Alaska, they can they don't have flat taxes. They have no income tax, but it's like energy and different industries that can generate a lot more revenue.
Wisconsin have no way of making it up? Like, so if they implemented a flat tax saying, oh, we could do this. Like if we said legalized marijuana.
Yeah. Which is also dead on arrival.
Yep.
There was no proposal in conjunction with Devin Lemieux's proposal of how that money would be made up, I think. Okay. Unless there was like a proposed overall sales tax increase. Well,
thank you. And thank you for listening to this section we call Kristen Explains Things to Greg.
Hopefully, I'm waiting to see someone text in and be like, Kristen, you were totally wrong. That is, I was like, I couldn't look things up in real time. I was like, this is off of memory. Yep, da, 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 da. Here you go.
You can always correct us at 844-967-2789.
All right, well, that is not going to be in the budget, but also another thing that looks like it's also not likely going to be in the budget is Evers' local sales tax proposal. That would be funding at 20% of the statewide sales tax going back to cities and municipalities via shared revenue. This was from a luncheon yesterday.
Ooh, shared revenue.
And it seems like to me, reading this, that it's basically not so much that they don't like the idea, they being Republicans on the Joint Finance Committee, but more that they just don't like it was Evers' idea.
Yeah.
Because it was kind of their idea first, and then Evers proposed it, but now they just don't really want to take it. And so,
well, you can't give them a win.
Well, also, I think if they do that, yes, one, they can't give them a win because we're still in that mindset. But also, I know that Voss was pushing the bigger municipalities to make changes to certain things to get more shared revenue, almost holding shared revenue over their heads, saying like, well, you know, if you change your infrastructure here, you adjust things there, we'll talk about more share revenue for you. And if they do this, maybe Milwaukee won't have to kowtow to the Republicans on
that could be
requests.
That could be. Basically, the two Republicans said they would build their budget. This is Mark Bourne and who was the other person at the
Is it budget? Howard?
No, it was Howard Markline.
Yeah.
And saying that they would build their budget based on base levels. So the co-chairs said that there are opportunities for agreement with the governor, such on shared revenue to help fund local governments. Bourne said that doesn't mean they support what the governor is proposing, but they agree it's important to make progress on this on shared revenue, which is good because something needs to happen. But the quote was, that's not going to be something we're looking for. We're going to be looking for innovation and for really how this money funds the future of what local governments need to provide. So we're not interested in funding the same old systems with just new money. We want reforms. We want improvements that really fund the future of what are really essentially services that local governments have to provide. I don't really know what that means.
Well, yeah, because he didn't say anything. He didn't provide a solution himself.
Yeah, and I don't know what.
And then what was
innovate?
And then of course, Markland mentioned changes to Milwaukee's pension system as an example. Like they want to get their way. They're gonna put their boot on the neck of bigger cities, the ones who don't vote for them, as they always do, and they're gonna hold their shared revenue hostage.
So it'll be interesting to watch what proposal they come up with if they're pretty likely not going to adopt Evers' idea.
Yeah.
And then this feels like... I think this is going to be hard. I don't think this is going to end up in the budget, but I could be wrong. But this broke yesterday. I don't know if it broke. This was published yesterday.
It was published yesterday, yeah.
Tony Evers seeks $3.8 billion, which is over half of what the surplus is, for building projects, nearly half of which are on UW campuses. That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money. And honestly, I'm not going to lie. Like, I love Papa Evers, but that made me very nervous. I'm like, are we just looking to blow the entirety of the surplus? Is that what he wants to do? Because, yeah, it's 7.5 is pretty cool, but, you know, I was looking at an article saying, like, we can celebrate that, but Minnesota has a $17.5 billion budget or surplus. And I would say, like, yeah, if we had nearly $20 billion in surplus, maybe this, but blowing over half of it on... I'm wondering if he's going in saying, I only need $1.4 billion or... $2 billion, but I'm going to say 3.8 so I can negotiate it down.
So it's proposing projects in 28 of the state's 72 counties, and it's things that include $1.8 billion for the UW system for brick-and-mortar building projects. Other big-ticket items include $41 million for fiber optic upgrades to the state capitol to improve cellular service, an additional $60 million for the new Wisconsin History Museum, to offset rising construction costs, and $190 million for juvenile correction facilities that would eventually lead to the closing of the state's long-troubled Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake youth prisons. And so it seems like stuff that does need to get funded and does need to happen, but I don't know where this falls on the priority scale. And also, is there other ways to fund it? Like, sometimes I feel like with building upgrades and stuff, and I'm not always the one who say, oh, we shouldn't just rely on rich people to pick and choose the projects that should get funded. But some of this stuff feels like, isn't this what donors are for?
I think in the UW system, yeah. I mean, it's like instead of building them a library, saying like, hey, do you want to donate so much money for fiber optic, or not fiber optic, that's for the state. But like something like that where we need to upgrade the science department. We need to work on the – yeah, I think that – And they'll probably come back and say, like, yeah, we do have donors for that. Okay, well, where's that money going then, too? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, 3.8 just seems like such a lot of money. And almost, like, they're probably like, you're out of your mind.
Yeah.
You're out of your mind.
I even see that one, and I'm thinking of Voss's stupid quote of, like, I feel like I'm watching Oprah. Like, you get a billion, and you get a billion. Yeah. And because that does seem like a lot of money. Especially if you couple it with what we talked about last Wednesday, which was the $290 million for the Brewers Stadium.
Yep.
And it just coming back to constantly questioning, I was like, all right, with a historic surplus that pales in comparison to Minnesota, apparently, but is still big, like, what is the most important things to fund? And I get that buildings need to be updated and improved, but I don't know. It feels like other stuff that should be prioritized.
You know, we can't go back in time and change the five counties tax. You know, the taxpayers built that stadium. Mm-hmm. I think it's fair to say to the owners and say, all right, you guys take care of the upkeep now. We built it for you. You guys got to change the light bulbs and put a new coat of paint on there. It's not my problem.
Yeah.
It's your problem. You're the rich ones. We did the heavy lifting. Now you guys pick up a paint bucket.
But then what? I mean, the threat is that they would just leave.
Well, and that's every time. It's always, we'll leave. Okay, cool. Where are the world famous Milwaukee Brewers going to go? Kansas.
Kansas doesn't have a baseball team?
They have one in Kansas City. Yeah. Oh. They can just be Kansas. Kansas Brewers. Kansas Brownbacks.
Kansas Brewers.
Kansas Brewers.
All right. Well, when we come
back to Seattle.
Oh, yeah. A reminder that please donate to your local food bank because food share benefits ended and it's going to cause a strain. So we'll talk a little bit more about that when we return. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Madnair. And we got Greg Bach here because it's Wednesday. And rolling through the first hour. And just a reminder, I know this was last, was it last Monday Sherry Tessler was here?
Yes.
And Sherry
Tessler,
from the
Hunger Task Force.
Executive Director of Hunger Task Force was here to talk about the looming crisis, basically, that we could be, that could end up happening in Wisconsin, but also nationally, because as of yesterday, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, known as SNAP nationally, here it is called Food Share in Wisconsin, expired yesterday across 32 states, which includes Wisconsin. And nationally, it's impacted more than 40 million Americans. And in Wisconsin, it's going to be hundreds of thousands of Wisconsinites. And it's not good. It's basically, and I think the big fear is that a lot of people don't know that this is coming. And so they're going to go to try to buy food with the additional $95 a month they were getting under this emergency program. And it's not going to be there. And for some people, they're going to go down to $23 for the month.
Isn't that just shocking?
And
just criminal.
The group that is likely going to be affected the most is elderly people who are on fixed incomes. And this is happening at a time when food costs are still record high,
yeah,
as far as how far $100 gets you at the grocery store. And not very far anymore.
And even without inflation, it's still going to be too high for $23 a month.
And so, you know, I know that we talked about the Badger boxes and certain initiatives that Hunger Task Force is trying to do. But as far as having a more substantial funding option to make sure people don't go hungry, but until that happens, because we know how quickly government moves, this is a reminder to support your local food bank, because they are all going to be under in high demand right now as far as people needing to find other ways to get food that they, because they can't afford to buy their own right now. Jane, you look concerned. Oh. And so that was kind of the biggest thing I had to, I just wanted to be able to remind people. Did you know this was happening?
No, I didn't. I mean, it's one of the things this is not something I was aware of, no.
And I think what's really disturbing about this too is that a lot of seniors are going to be affected by this.
Yeah.
A lot of seniors and a lot of children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, as one study found that at least nationally, this extension or this emergency, these emergency funds, was keeping 4.2 million people out of poverty.
Wow.
Jeez.
And the other thing that's ending with the pandemic era assistance is 14 million people could be losing access to Medicaid. And it's because the government officially is looking into who's eligible for the first time in 3 years. So
for the past 3 years, they have just allowed people to take Medicaid without vetting them?
I don't know the full. So if you get health care coverage through Medicaid, you might be at risk of losing that coverage over the next year. And this is from AP, that roughly 84 million people are covered by the government-sponsored program, which has grown by 20 million people since January of 2020, just before COVID-19 hit, the pandemic hit. And so, but as states begin checking everyone's availability for Medicaid for the first time in 3 years,
wow,
as many as 14 million people could lose access to that health care coverage. A look at why so many people may no longer qualify for the Medicaid program over the next year and what you need to know if you're one of those people who relies on the program. And so this, they go into more information on how this is going to affect different people. But this kind of ties into what we were talking about in the first segment of, because if the student loan forgiveness doesn't happen, because right now you have, correct me if I'm wrong, Greg, pausing student loan payments has been on pause basically since like 2020,
it's,
right?
Currently it's still, I think it's on pause until May, I believe. I never paused mine personally.
Okay.
I paid the entire time. But yeah, I mean, people haven't had to pay since basically April or May of 2020. And for some people, it's been a blessing because their student loans are so, but those bills are gonna come back.
Well, I mean, and that was part of the
and
the
interest
concern.
Rates have risen.
But it's a concern with all of this, right? Yeah. Is that you gave flexibility, you gave lenience, you gave extra money for all these different programs to get through, you know, a once in a lifetime pandemic where some people dramatically increased their wealth.
Yeah.
And for other people, the last 3 years have been really, really hard. And these big blanket programs through federal funding, you know, I get the argument that at some point they have to end.
Yeah.
But it's like there's a lot of people who are not back to normal. There's a lot of our systems that are not back to normal. I mean, there's, you know, I don't pretend to understand the intricacies of why food is so expensive still. As far as I know, with eggs, it was avian flu. And I know, obviously, with the Russian-Ukraine war, there's stuff with grain and stuff like that. But, like, across the board, I don't know how much of this is just because all of our groceries are made by the same four companies. And so they can price gouge and stuff. So, like, I would have to look more into, like, why things are so expensive. But regardless, they are. And just going back to, like, normal before times isn't that easy for a lot of people.
I mean, I have to imagine, yeah. And I don't know. It's weird because I think about my life before the pandemic and now where my life is now. I actually feel better and happier and more fulfilled. So I can't, it's hard for me to identify on the sides of the individuals who are so deeply affected by these programs that we're here to help and now they're going away. And $23 a month for food is criminal. Like, that is, and I'm sure there are a lot of people who are like, you shouldn't even be getting that.
I know. Isn't that wild to think about people? It's like, you're still like,
why am I paying for your food?
Yeah, exactly.
If you can afford to make a donation, peanut butter is really good. I'm trying to think of the other things that Sherry told us last week, Kristen. It was, you know, canned fruit and not in sugar water, you know, in just regular fruit juice and stuff like that. So check with your local food pantries. They are going to need the help.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right. Well, that will do it for our first hour today, Wednesday, March 1st. We did 1 hour. We got 2 hours to go. Stick around. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Bye.